This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. This time a year ago, there was no scarcity of news coverage of the troubled University of Michigan football program leading to the firing of athletic director Dave Brandon and football coach Brady Hoke and the eventual hiring of Jim Harbaugh as the new Wolverine coach. But those headlines only skimmed the surface of this very, very complicated story. Michigan radio sports commentator John U. Bacon started digging and digging. He interviewed more than 100 people and filled 1,000 pages with notes. And the result is his newest book, End Zone, The Rise, Fall, and Return of Michigan Football. And John, I want to put this right out on the table as we start talking to anyone who might be inclined to say, well, it's about football or it's about the University of Michigan and I support fill-in-the-blank university and I've heard it all anyway. I want to just say, as someone who has read the book from stem to stern, no, you haven't. You did a lot of digging, brought up an awful lot. And I got out of the book something that I think a lot of workers in this country that have gone through, and that is that an organization is kind of humming along, it's working along in its rhythm, and in comes the new sheriff in town, and he or she is going to fix things, and if it ain't broke, break it.
That is Dave's ringing phrase, and somewhat superficial in my opinion, but it can be effective in some ways in some situations. It is really not effective when you're taking over a century-plus-old athletic department that has worked exceedingly well, is probably the best in the country if you measured all different ways, championships, success, reputation, finances, facilities, and all this stuff. It was far from broken. So his phrase is always, if it ain't broke, break it. And that was a ringing phrase for him, and that's I got to give him credit. That's exactly what he did. And when he left, it was basically broken.
It was indeed. Well, based on your reporting, when President Mary Sue Coleman pressured the search committee to bypass three very qualified candidates for athletic director and hire her very, very clear choice, former regent and former Domino's CEO Dave Brandon, just what was the state of the Michigan Athletic Organization? The part you refer to as the rise. You say there was a century of tradition.
Absolutely. And the department that Bill Martin and his staff had left was, as one of the guys says, Jason Winters, the former CFO, says, I can't imagine any AD getting the keys to a department in better shape than ours. They were pulling $10 million a year annual operating surplus, had about $60 million in the bank, 60, not 16, in various ways. You had already renovated 14 buildings or built them for a cost of over $400 million, and that was all being paid off. So you were in great shape. The programs were clean. You had good coaches in place in almost all situations. So it really was a doggone near-perfect athletic department with great staff, great camaraderie, a great team spirit, and it was built to last. And Dave came in almost immediately and kind of broke it all up by design, as he said he would in his defense.
Right at the beginning with the staff.
Absolutely. Said right away he'd talk to Rotary clubs and Kiwanis clubs and so on, the economic clubs and whatnot, and say and basically brag that in the first year he's going to get rid of 100 people because they are resistant to change. What that really means is you can't disagree.
Yes, and now that people are free to talk without worrying about one of Brandon's Fire Him Friday emails, which we're going to talk about, I'm interested in what the initial impressions of the athletic department staff were about this new boss when he took over in early 2010. I mean, how long before the clouds began to roll in internally?
A few months. But at first, they were all excited about it because the way Dave was talking about it, you know, we're going to strive to be leaders and best in everything we do. And they all said, that sounds great. You know, building our successes. Nobody left when Dave showed up. In other words, they didn't see trouble coming. Peg Canham, Don Canham's widow, sent him a nice note saying, we're all excited to have you here. And they were. The regents were excited. I think almost everybody was excited.
Because he'd been a good regent.
He'd been a great regent. And this is true of the Democrats and the Republicans saying this. Larry Deitch, Kathy White on record. Paul Courant, former provost, former dean, said he's one of the best regents we ever had. And so he came in with a very good reputation, did a great job with the NCAA investigation and the Detroit Free Press report that inspired that, and was a real pro at the stand talking about that.
It's easy to see why President Coleman was very, very very clear in the fact that she favored him for this post.
Exactly right. And Ted Spencer, the former dean of admissions, had a great quote in there saying that she was Dave's alpha male. He got things done. Mm-hmm. He knew the political winds. He could talk to the regents and get things through, including, by the way, the renovation for the stadium at over $300 million that got pushed through 5-3. And Dave was essential to that effort. So he came in with a lot of pluses, and everybody, including me, I must say, said that this is probably going to work out very well.
And then how long before the storm clouds started to gather?
It came in concentric circles. The first one was internal, where after a few months, the employee started realizing this might not be the honeymoon that we thought it was going to be. Mm-hmm. When he starts talking about when I'm at Domino's, he says, of my six top executives, four were gone within a year, and two were gone shortly thereafter. That's his first meeting with his leadership team. He's got a cultural survey, one of these employee satisfaction things, that was basically rigged. And they proved it a year later. So that's a heads up as well. Then you start getting rid of guys people liked a lot, like Jamie Morris, Marty Bodner, a list of other guys who've been there 10, 20, 30 years, who had done great work for the university, had never sought jobs elsewhere, never really asked for a raise. And they all stayed, and all, one by one, the Fire 'Em Fridays, the Friday email, the dreaded Friday email, 143 employees, more than half the staff he inherited, was gone within about 3.5 years.
And it's one of the many firing stories that really hit me hard. And tell us about Marty Bodner's firing. He asked a question.
Shameless. First of all, Marty Bodner played basketball here at Michigan, was a real hero, great guy, gets his law degree, comes back to be the ticketing manager at Michigan. Clearly, you'd have to say overqualified for the job. Turned down more money to be the Barberton, Ohio, his hometown, to run a foundation there at a fairly sizable raise. Came back within a week saying to Bill Martin, take me back. This is where I belong. So this is one of those stories, one of these true Michigan men who love the place, mm-hmm. who come back for a pay cut. And he did a great job with tickets. And the reason you know he did, because you don't know his name. All right. How many hassles, disputes, and so on did he handle? Very quietly, the Letterman loved him, the donors loved him, the longtime ticket holders loved the guy. He did a great job. He took on as a volunteer basis, no extra money in it.
He was asked to.
Asked to also run marketing, which is not a big thing under Bill Martin. As he said, if you have our stadium and you're full, marketing is not your problem. People are well aware of Michigan football.
Okay.
So Marty takes that over as being a good soldier. In a marketing meeting, he asked a very simple question. What are the four P's of marketing, which is 101 level stuff?
And what do you think about
Dave
it?
Dave sort of grinned a wan grin, if you will, and kind of waved it off, thinking minor leaguer. And at that point, everybody in the room knew that Marty's days were numbered based on that.
And these veteran staffers, it's quite clear from your reporting, were replaced with younger people generally making a whole lot more money and people who were never going to say no to Dave Brandon.
You're making 30, 40, 50% more than the guy you're replacing. The veterans got to teach you how to do their job so they can replace you, basically. There's a quote in the book named by Ryan Dewey and others. Once they've learned your job, then you're dispensable. So this is very much a corporate mentality here. And by saying that, corporations often work better than this. This is, in my opinion, a toxic corporate environment at that point.
Again, like I said, I think there are many people listening who have been through similar experiences in their organization, whatever it may be, because you could almost strip away the name University of Michigan and just say XYZ organization.
I would say Toys R Us or Domino's would work very well. And in fact, I talked to Tom Monahan at length, the Domino's founder, who basically lays out that exactly what he did at Domino's is what he did at Michigan. And his record at Domino's, by the way, is not nearly as sterling as advertised, and I break that down as well.
As we continue now, I want you to kind of take this business management lesson, and I want to give you a chance to tell us some of the things that as you dug in and you had people free to talk, your jaw dropped and your readers are going to go, what? Let's start with, you've touched on the Letterman and how there was a complete disrespect or disconnect and disrespect for that history. Let's talk about the customer, the fans. Brandon came in saying, we're enhancing the fan experience.
And his idea behind that was the fan experience was somehow wanting. So therefore, we need rock and roll music. We need endless flyovers. We need Beyonce during halftime of a Notre Dame game. To my knowledge, Beyonce could not even name the Michigan Wolverines mascot, let alone been to Ann Arbor. As I say in the book, Beyonce is to Michigan football what Bo Schembechler is to Beyonce. It's why do we need this?
Oil and water.
And that costs a lot of money, too, by the way. She does not come cheap. But the spending also was stunning. These salaries increased by 72% for administrative salaries, not coaching salaries. Any other department on campus, if that happened in the business school, the law school, LSNA, why would red flags not go up and say, this is crazy?
And then that translated into the fan experience because you have to monetize everything, and thus fans walk in one day and there's a noodle up on the scoreboard.
There's a noodle, and an actual noodle, actually, a big, gigantic construction noodle by Kraft Macaroni and Cheese. The phrase was, you know you love it. They did not love it, and of course, as usual, they had to throw the PR guys out there to lie for their boss, and there's no way to spin it. That noodle was scheduled to be there the entire season. So once this on Friday afternoon was such a PR disaster, the PR guys got to get out there, poor Dave Abloff in this case, and make up an explanation saying it's for our Super Fridays, and that's why we have it here. It's going to be gone tomorrow. That was never the plan.
We're talking with Michigan Radio Sports commentator John U. Bacon about his latest book, End Zone, The Rise, Fall, and Return of Michigan Football. Let's get to the student body. We all know students were outraged when Brandon imposed this general admission policy, and you explain it very clearly. So read the book, and you can understand why it mattered so much to this group of customers, the students.
They were not simply whiny, entitled kids. That was the first impression. That was the PR
score. And that was Brandon's impression. He said it's mommy and daddy's money.
He said that to Pete Nichols, a longtime booster, on the record.
Okay.
So as far as that one goes, the problem with the policy was you were no longer able to sit with your friends, which is the whole point. They thought that the cell phone service was the biggest thing. They're about to drop $10 million on cell phone service without asking the customers if they cared about that or not. In a survey of seven items that they sent out, a scientific survey to the student body, cell phone service ranked dead last. What ranked first was sitting with your friends. The same thing we've been doing since 1879 when Michigan football started.
So talk to us a little about the story you tell of Michael Proppy and Bobby Dischel from student government. These are kids who use tenacity and a know-how of statistics to basically torpedo Team Brandon's claims about student ticket sales.
Exactly right. By the way, trust me, there's a lot of good news in this book. Mm-hmm. The immune system at Michigan worked extremely well. When a foreign body came in that didn't match the DNA, essentially, the students, the faculty, the lettermen, all these people rose up, grassroots effort. It wasn't the FBI, it wasn't the NCAA making them do this, and they fixed it.
That's the return.
That's the return. That is the return, not wins and losses.
Yes.
But the return, in part, one of the most heartwarming, I think, stories was Michael Proppy and Bobby Dischel, the president and vice president of the student government, who normally no one ever knows. But they used their backgrounds at the Ford School of Public Policy and Stats, these are whiz-bang students, to run circles around the 40-something staffers in front of the regents, in front of the faculty meetings and so on, because they knew their stuff. And what they broke down was, you're comparing apples to oranges with your data. Let's go apples to apples. One of the great principles of stats, of course, is you got to compare attendance for noon starts to noon starts, 3:30 starts to 3:30 starts, night games to night games. Pretty obvious to you and me, was not obvious to the department. So in front of everybody with a PowerPoint and so on, he breaks everything down and points out that not only do 90% of the students hate this policy, and writing tons of emails and so on, the response rate was very high, very negative, it's not actually working. They broke it down to prove a comparison, games to games, that fewer students are showing up under your policy percentage-wise and fewer on time. So not only does everyone hate it, it's not even doing what you hoped it was going to do. So at that point, why are you keeping it? And they smoked them.
And, you know, the other story that really, really grabbed me, again, as a parent, it's the way you go to great pains not to portray Dave Brandon as a mustache-twirling villain, kind of a Frank Underwood from House of Cards. And you do it through one of the most touching and compelling stories you weave through the whole book, and that of Wolverine punter Will Hagerup.
That's right. There are a lot of people, there are about 24 people in the book who defend Dave Brandon. So I sought out everybody I could who's willing to go on the record, including Dave. Dave declined. Who to say positive things. He's got deans, regents, others saying a lot of positive things, and they mean them. So that needs to be figured into the equation. Dave Brandon, at his best, was with the student-athletes. He was sincerely interested in them, not just the football players, not just the stars, women's gymnastics, softball, men's tennis, whoever it was, they cared about these guys sincerely, and that was pretty cool. No better example than Will Hagerup, a punter, who was All-Big Ten punter at one point, who had three strikes in the drug policy, one of them for Adderall, I think, for studying, but still counts. And he worked his way, begged his way back on the team. Dave Brandon had no reason to take him back on paper, no self-interest at all, and a lot of reasons not to, because if Will Hagerup screws up in any way, shape, or form, all right, that is so on Dave. Four strikes, looks bad. Why'd you take him back? He'll be accused of self-interest for a punter and all that. And Dave judged the man on his character, talked to Will constantly for several years, talked to his therapist with Will's permission, all this business, and said, okay, I'm betting on you. and don't screw this up.
And Brady Hoke the same.
Brady Hoke did the same thing. The players loved Brady Hoke. And Brandon came through in a big way for Will and other athletes as well. And Will Hoggrup gets up at last year's players' banquet and said, Michigan football saved my life. And I have to thank, first of all, Dave Brandon, Greg Harden, who works with the athletes, and, of course, Brady Hoke. And that was utterly sincere. And Brandon has stayed in touch with Will after the fact. And as Will says to me, if he's the devil, why is he still calling me?
Yeah, yeah.
What can I do for him?
Now, to those who are not steeped in Wolverine history and who don't get the excitement over landing Jim Harbaugh, and we're talking now about the return. And as you say, we're not talking about
wins and losses.
That's it. So we're talking about what it took to recruit him as Brady Hoke's successor and what he meant to this organization. Tell us about that.
That was also one of the great surprises for me in the book, as I did all my interviews. And again, one of the more, if you care about right and wrong, frankly, and just people getting together, as well as the University of Michigan, the Letterman realized the thing was off the rails. It's not working. And to get Jim back, we got to rebuild a bridge from 07 that needed to be rebuilt. And we can't wait till December to do it. So we're not anti-Brady Hoke. They're very clear about that. They wanted Brady to succeed. No one I talked to had any problem with Brady. But they knew if they waited till December, it's too late. So they started, after the Notre Dame game, a phone-calling circle, if you will, of all the Michigan greats, the guys, Tom Brady, Charles Woodson, et cetera, as well as the guys that Jim Harbaugh grew up admiring when he was a ball boy for the team back in the 70s, 30 or 40 phone calls going to Jim, usually on Saturday nights, all saying, man, we love you. Our arms are open. The past is the past. We know what you meant. Please come back.
Why did it matter so much to have Jim Harbaugh?
Because
what did he represent?
You could have gotten three NFL coaches actually contacted the AD to come to Michigan. That's how appealing the job still is, amazingly. Mm-hmm. But only one could reunify the family instantly. Only one could make everyone feel like Michigan still matters instantly, still relevant. If you get the hottest coach in the NFL to turn down no doubt more money in the NFL to come to Michigan, look, $5 million is not exactly a vow of poverty, Cindy, and $2 million bonus on top of that. But I guarantee you, the Bears, the Jets, the Oakland Raiders all would have doubled that. $10 million easily is what I was hearing. Jim did not even wait a second to even hear the offers. He was closed up within minutes after the Niners game. The deal was done, and he's not shopping around. That is it. As he told me, look, don't put me on the same dance floor as Mother Teresa. I'm making $5 million bucks. He said, but I can tell you I did not come back to Michigan for the money. That is the spirit of college football and, one would hope, the University of Michigan.
Final thought. What do you believe is the big lesson here for any manager, any organization?
Dave Brandon knows a lot of things that I don't know. Hats off. He's a very smart guy. But this story boils down to a simple thing. If you don't understand human relationships, fans to their team, all right, coaches with their players, the Letterman with their alma mater, all this, if you don't understand those relationships, you're not going to succeed as an athletic director in college.
The book is Endzone, The Rise, Fall, and Return of Michigan Football by Michigan Radio sports commentator John U. Bacon. A great read, and it was great to talk with you about everything you learned.
Thank you.